Eddie, the Mechanic. Chapter 5. The Winter Track Season, Part 2. The next day, practice is again at 7 a.m. The usual announcements are made, followed by the sprinters working with Coach Herndon, the distance team working with Dr. Paxton, and the field athletes working with Dr. Bonomo. Heading to the sprinting track with the sprinters, Eddie is intercepted by Dr. Braun, who asks him, "Yesterday, Kathy mentioned something about a training sled that you designed and built. Can you tell me what that is?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. It's a resistance sled. It's in my trunk. Do you want to see it?" Dr. Braun replies, "Sure, if it's not too much trouble." Eddie puts on his warm-up suit, since it's cold outside. Dr. Braun and Eddie head outside, and Eddie gets his resistance sled out of the trunk of his car, along with a 25-pound weight plate. They head over to the sand track, where Eddie loads the sled with the 25-pound weight plate. Eddie then demonstrates his resistance sled, running 100 yards to the midpoint of the sand track and back. Dr. Braun puts on the harness and gives it a try. Dr. Braun then sprints 100 yards to the midpoint of the track and back. Eddie watches, wondering if his invention has any worth or recognition with the experts. Dr. Braun returns and exclaims, "This thing is awesome." Eddie, to say the least, is relieved to hear that. Eddie's deficiencies were often made evident by Mr. Crum. Should Eddie have brought the resistance sled to the high school, Mr. Crum would have likely accused him of making it in the school shop and attempt to suspend him. Dr. Braun's reaction is a welcome departure from the childish behavior of Mr. Crum. Dr. Braun asks Eddie, "How did you come up with this?" Eddie explains, "I tried running on hills to get faster, but it seemed to work my quads more. And running on hills is not the same as running on the track. So, I was at the beach one day, running, and it was very windy, like when there's a big storm over the ocean. Running in the sand and into the wind gave me a really good workout. That's when I thought of the sled. I use the same muscles as I do when I'm sprinting, but I'm going against a lot of resistance. And you can't exactly duplicate the resistance in the gym." Dr. Braun quickly realizes that Eddie is no idiot. Dr. Braun, who is an avid runner himself, can clearly see how Eddie's resistance sled can improve an athlete's performance on the track. And with Eddie running a 9.2-second 100-yard dash, his training methods are not really up for too much discussion. Dr. Braun asks Eddie, "How many of these have you built?" Eddie replies, "4. This one, and I made one for Tessa, one for Erica, and one for my brother, John. They got the newest model." Dr. Braun asks, "The newest model? How is the newer model different?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I've been improving it since the summer of my junior year." Showing Dr. Braun the improvements, Eddie explains, "I added these longitudinal members, which are on an angle. They help make the sled go straighter. And I added these parts to dig a little deeper into the sand. The original ones weren't long enough. And I moved the weight stack to the back of the sled. It used to be in the middle. And when I finally got it the way I wanted it, I welded it together." Dr. Braun asks Eddie, "Do you mind if some of the other runners try this out?" Eddie replies, "No. Not at all." Dr. Braun tells Eddie, "I'll be right back," as he heads into the arena to round up a few runners to try Eddie's invention. While Dr. Braun is away, Eddie wonders how his training sled will be viewed by the other runners. Eddie then quickly realizes that he doesn't care. Eddie is the fastest guy around, and he got there by his own training methods, not by following someone else's training protocols. Dr. Braun returns with a group of runners in their warm-up suits. Eddie is glad to see Kathy, Mark, and Paula among them. Dr. Braun asks Eddie to explain to the group what he explained to him earlier, specifically about how he developed the training sled, which Eddie is glad to do. After Eddie's explanation and brief demonstration, Dr. Braun asks, Okay, we're all going to try this out. Who's first? With McCutcheon among the group, Mark, who has used the sled many times in the past, volunteers to go first. Mark fully intends to intimidate McCutcheon one way or another. Mark puts the harness on and sprints 220 yards to the end of the sand track. Turning around, he then sprints 220 yards back to the starting line. Sprint, however, is not quite the word for it. In dragging the sled, a runner is nowhere near their top speed. When he returns, Mark comments to Eddie, "You changed it. It's a lot harder now." Eddie replies, "I improved it when I got it back from Erica. She mentioned that it was getting too easy." Kathy goes next, followed by Paula, Braden, and then Johnson. Running 440 yards and dragging the training sled seems to be a decent workout for everyone who tries. McCutcheon is next in line after Johnson. Mark, standing alongside of Eddie, whispers, "This is going to be interesting." Eddie replies, "Yeah. And I'm going to have to disinfect it when he's done with it." Correcting Eddie, Paula whispers to Eddie and Mark, "Forget disinfecting it. You'll need an exorcist." McCutcheon puts the harness on and attempts to sprint to the end of the track, slowing his already slow pace as he runs. McCutcheon tries to make it to the end of the track, but he runs out of juice. Braden, stating the obvious, comments, "It looks like his puny little ass gave out." Mark replies, "Not only his ass. The rest of him too." Braden runs to where McCutcheon stalled out, puts on the harness, and returns the sled to the starting line. Braden then runs to the end of the track and back again. Mark whispers to Eddie, "Watching this kind of shit makes it worth being on the team." McCutcheon, walking back to the starting line, now gains a bit of understanding why his ass has been kicked on the track for the last 7 years. Leggett takes a turn and does a little better than McCutcheon. He is at least able to get the sled to the end of the track and back to the starting line, albeit quite slowly. McCutcheon's older brother, Scott, gives it a try. Like his younger brother, Scott is not able to get the sled back to the starting line. A few more runners give it a try, many amazed at how difficult it is to drag the sled. Last to go is the distance man, Daryl Stone. Stone runs to the end of the track and back. When he returns, Stone quickly asks, "Where can I get one of these?" Eddie replies, "I'd have to build one for you." The team star distance runner is also very good at the half mile and 440-yard dash. He can clearly see how the training sled can improve his sprints. Once everyone has had a few runs, Eddie and Kathy put the sled back in Eddie's trunk as everyone else heads inside. Eddie asks Kathy, "I wonder what everyone thought." Kathy replies, "It seems like everyone likes it, except for McCutcheon. But he doesn't matter." Eddie tells Kathy, "Before you guys came out, Dr. Braun tried it, and he seemed to like it." Kathy replies, "Good. He's probably going to ask you to make a few for the team." Eddie and Kathy rejoin the group and head inside. Dr. Braun asks the runners who have tried the sled to have a seat on the bleachers. Dr. Braun asks for everyone's feedback. The reception to Eddie's invention was overwhelmingly positive. Stone suggests, "I think it's really great. I think it would be better, though, if there was a way to modify the resistance." Eddie informs Stone, "There is. That's what the weight plates are for. We had 25 pounds on it out there. I usually work out with 50 or 75 pounds. I begin stripping the weight when it starts getting too hard." Stone gives Eddie a thumbs up, indicating his approval. When asked for his feedback, McCutcheon offers a differing opinion, stating, "I really don't think it will help with my training. I don't think it's worth too much." Braden, offering his opinion of McCutcheon's comment, interjects, "What ain't worth much is you. We kicked your team's ass for 7 years. You can probably still see my footprint on your ass from all the ass kickings you got. Dr. Braun, who was quite impressed with Braden's performance yesterday, lets Braden's comment fly. After all, Braden demonstrated he can run a quarter mile in 45.3 seconds. McCutcheon takes 64.6 seconds to cover the same distance. Also, fresh in Dr. Braun's mind from yesterday is how Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden finished the 4x440 relay before the anchorman of the opposing team received his baton. Dr. Braun then instructs everyone to join the practice session, which is in progress. The events out on the sand track are the first inklings that Dr. Braun received that there might be just a bit of a rivalry between some of the runners. Coach Herndon picked up on the contention a little earlier. But sometimes rivalries are good. It stirs up internal competition, such as that between Eddie and Mark, Kathy and Paula, Hoffer and John, and Erica and Tessa. And better internal competition leads to better external competition. Back on the track, Dr. Braun wants Braden timed in the 440-yard dash. Yesterday's time of 45.3 seconds was during a relay, which is not quite indicative of true performance. He asks Coach Herndon to arrange the race before everyone leaves, preferably at the end of the training session. Dr. Braun has Eddie, Mark, Johnson, Braden, Leggett, and Todd McCutcheon rest on the bleachers for a while before the 440-yard dash time trials. Practice comes to an early end when Dr. Braun has the team take a seat on the bleachers. Coach Herndon announces, "Before we leave, there will be one more time trial, which will be a 440-yard dash. Braden, take lane 1. Boganskaya, lane 2. Svoboda, lane 3. Johnson, lane 4. Leggett, lane 5. Todd McCutcheon, lane 6. The athletes head to the blocks, knowing that, once again, they are under the microscope. At the blocks, Braden looks over at McCutcheon and exclaims, "See, Junior. I kick your ass free of charge. And you assholes thought we get paid. Let's get this ass kicking started." Dr. Braun is now certain that there's something going on behind the scenes between the velocity-challenged McCutcheon and Braden, the professional ass kicker. And Dr. Braun is quite amused by Braden's enthusiasm. But with Braden's performance thus far, Dr. Braun does not seem to care that Braden antagonizes McCutcheon. On the bench, Kathy tells Paula, "Wow. Listen to Braden. And we thought he'd have to change his tactics if he was going to run in college." Paula replies, "He ain't changing, girl. And neither is Mark." As the runners are getting into the blocks, Coach Herndon, referring to Braden, tells Dr. Braun, "You know, I really like that guy, even more now than I did yesterday." Dr. Braun replies, "So do I. Hopefully we can sign him." The starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and Braden's free of charge as kicking is underway. Eddie, however, is not about to let Braden steal the entire show. Neither is Mark. Halfway through the race, two groups have clearly formed. It appears that Braden has a slight lead, with Eddie, Mark, and Johnson right up there with him. Leggett and McCutcheon trail, losing ground as the race progresses. During the second lap, the tribe fights it out, leaving McCutcheon and Leggett in the dust. Coming out of the final turn, Braden is clearly in the lead. Braden crosses the finish line first, quickly followed by Eddie, then Mark and Johnson. Far behind, taking fifth place, is Leggett. And, as Braden predicted, McCutcheon, finishing in last place, got his ass kicked free of charge. After the times are compiled, Coach Herndon announces, "Todd McCutcheon, 64.3 long and drawn out seconds. Steve Leggett, 57.5 seconds. Eric Johnson, 45.9 seconds. Mark Svoboda, 45.5 seconds. Edward Boganskaya, 45.4 seconds. And Axel Braden, 45.3 seconds. After hearing his time, Braden exclaims, "Look at that. I'm even kicking my own ass now. Ain't nobody beating me in my race." Braden then looks over at McCutcheon, telling him, "And it looks like everyone's kicking your ass, Junior. Maybe you should get your ass in gear. You're stuck in neutral." Eddie, the mechanic, yells back at Braden, his gears are stripped. While Braden's time of 45.3 seconds is the same time that he ran yesterday during the 4x440 relay race, today's race was from a standing start. During a relay race, the clock starts on an individual leg when the runner receives the baton and stops when he or she delivers the baton. Yesterday, as the anchorman, Braden had the benefit of being at nearly his top speed when he received the baton. So, today's time of 45.3 seconds in the 440-yard dash is actually a significant improvement over yesterday's performance. As Braden goes on ranting, Coach Herndon whispers to Dr. Braun, "Johnson is running a lot faster since these guys showed up." Dr. Braun replies, "I can see that. I can't wait to talk with these guys after practice." On the flip side, McCutcheon's performance has gone down the toilet since Mark has arrived. Quite impressed with Braden's performance, Coach Herndon tells Dr. Braun, "We've got to see if we can sign this Braden guy somehow." Dr. Braun agrees, replying, "Hopefully, we can sign them all." Dr. Braun, who will meet with Braden in a while, suspects the meeting will be quite interesting. After practice, as they are heading to the locker rooms, Kathy tells Eddie, "See that? Look how energetic everyone is." Eddie replies, "Yeah, I can see that. Braden really gets people fired up." Mark comments, "Except for McCutcheon. Braden is more like a fire extinguisher to McCutcheon." Paula laughs and exclaims, "You got that right. Mark is right." Somehow the presence of Braden and the rest of the tribe, most notably Mark, has always dampened McCutcheon's performance. Braden's rants, however, often crush the opponent's confidence before the race even begins. Perhaps McCutcheon still sees himself as the opposition. Braden catches up with Eddie and Kathy and informs them, "I got a meeting with someone in an hour. I wonder what that's going to be about." Kathy tells Braden, "So does Mitchell and Bobby B. They are going to try to figure out a way for you guys to run for the university." Braden replies, "I'd really like to run track again. I hope they think I'm good enough." Kathy tells Braden, "Trust me. There's no problem in that department." 2 seconds off the world record in the 440-yard dash is definitely good enough to make the team. Braden knows he's good enough for the team. His question was whether he is good enough academically. After all, this is college. Braden's understanding is that only straight-A students go to college, and he had a high B average in high school. Everyone heads to the locker room, wondering what will become of the last 3 days of workouts. The tribe decides to get pizza tomorrow at lunch to share any news. With Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B suddenly appearing on the scene, Dr. Braun has a lot of work to do convincing the administration to sign the new guys. The problem is that the university has already given quite a few full-track scholarships in the past 2 years. Barbara, Janice, Stone, Kathy, Paula, and now Eddie and Mark are among those on full scholarship. While full scholarships are commonplace in some sports, such as football, in track and field they are quite rare and are only granted to those with exceptional talent. Fortunately, for Dr. Braun, he has Dr. Karakova in his corner. Later that day, at the high school, while Kathy and Paula are working with the sprinters, Kathy mentions to Paula, "You know, I can't wait until lunch tomorrow. I really hope there's good news." Paula reassures Kathy, telling her, "There will be. Just like you mentioned a few times when Mark and Eddie had their meeting, they don't call you in for an interview to show you the door." Kathy replies, "Yeah, you're right. They are going to offer them all a package. They have to." Kathy can't wait to hear the news. She really wants the tribe back together again, and has been doing her best to make that happen. All she can do now is to sit and wait. The next day, the tribe meets for pizza. Kathy cannot wait to hear whether Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B have received an offer to join the team. Kathy and Eddie sit in the parking lot, waiting for Mark and Paula, who are picking up Braden and Mitchell. 10 long minutes go by. Kathy sighs and says, finally, as Paula drives up with Mark, Braden, and Mitchell. Eddie replies, it hasn't been that long. McCrutchen could have run a quarter mile in the time we were waiting. Kathy laughs, but now wants to hear the news. Once they are together, Kathy asks, well, are you guys on the team? Paula answers, they won't say anything until everyone is together. You ain't getting anything out of them. Trust me. I've already tried. Kathy can tell that it's good news, purely by the smile on Braden's face. Johnson and Barbara arrive next. While everyone is waiting, they catch up on what they've been up to during the last 6 months. During mid-conversation, Eddie comments, here comes Bobby B. Kathy, not seeing any sign of the shot doc, asks, where? Eddie replies, I hear his engine. In a moment, the shot doc rolls up on his BSA motorcycle with Erica on the back. They all head inside and find a table. Joe, not having seen Braden and Mitchell for a while, comes over to the table to say hello. Joe talks with everyone for a few minutes, so Kathy has to suffer through another delay in finding out the news. Joe is particularly glad to hear that Braden is back in town. During the conversation, Joe takes everyone's order, then heads back behind the counter to begin making pizza. Kathy asks, well, how did the meetings go? Braden tells everyone, I'm gonna go first. They gave me a really good deal. They gave me a job as a campus police officer. And I can start right now. I wasn't really expecting that. Kathy asks, but are you on the team? Braden replies, oh yeah. And they gave me a full scholarship too. And they said I can get a degree in criminal justice. And my work on the force will count as class credit. So, Braden will receive class credit for keeping fraternity and sorority parties under control. Braden receives high fives and fist bumps from the tribe. Eddie asks, what made you decide to go to the police academy anyway? Braden explains, when all that shit went down last year when Chucky threw the javelin at you, that Goldshit guy tried to run away. The officer chased him, but Goldshit was faster. So I chased down Goldshit and handed him over to the officer. That was a good feeling, handing that asshole over to the officer. Since then, it's been in the back of my mind. Officer Hayes probably could have caught Goldstein, but the officer was weighed down with about 20 pounds of equipment strapped to his body and a belt that severely restricts movement. Kathy, wanting to get all the news on the table, asks, who's next? Bobby B looks at Mitchell and says, me, I guess. They want me on the team too. But we still have to figure some things out. Kathy asks, like what? Bobby B explains, I still want to work with Mark if I can because the money is good. Erica mentions, good, because I can be an expensive date. That would be the primary reason why Bobby B wants to continue working. He does not want to lose his good income to just throw the shot put. And going to class was not exactly high on Bobby B's list of things to do. Bobby B continues, they said Mark is getting a degree in construction management, so I was thinking of the same thing. Eddie replies, that is so awesome, bro. Kathy asks, did they give you a scholarship? Bobby B replies, yeah. They said they'll pay for everything. Since Erica is present, Mark asks Bobby B, so, do you have to inspect the shot put and keep it clean, or do they have someone to do that for you? Not wanting to go there, Bobby B replies, we didn't really talk about that. And the coaches probably won't talk about that at the university, but you can be sure that Eddie and Mark will bring it up again at some point in the future. Moving along, not wanting to hear anything about keeping a shot put clean right now, Kathy tells Mitchell, "It looks like you're next. Spill the beans." Mitchell replies, "They gave me a full scholarship, and I'm getting a degree in communications. I figure I can use it if I ever organize races again." "It sounds like a great deal," Kathy exclaims, "Awesome." Kathy then asks, "Are you going to classes?" Mitchell replies, "Yeah. I wanted to go to college when I got out of high school. But I didn't want to borrow money and go the student loan route." Paula asks Mitchell, "So, no university offered you a scholarship last year?" Mitchell explains, "Well, some of the scouts tried to get me to go to their colleges, but they are not colleges that I really wanted to go to. And all they offered were partial scholarships. So, I'd have to borrow money. Borrowing money and going to a college or university that I didn't really want to go to didn't seem like a good deal to me." Kathy replies, "You do have a point." Now all excited, Kathy exclaims, "The team is back together again." Mitchell replies, "Well, almost. They said that we'll be enrolled next year, so that means we won't be running until next year. The problem is something about funding." Braden adds, "Yeah. They told me the same thing, but I can start my job immediately." The same holds true for Bobby B. They will all be enrolled in the next academic year. Kathy throws out the question, "I wonder what the deal is with the funding." Paula mentions, "I suppose there's only so much scholarship money to go around. Maybe your dad would know." Bobby B. comments, "Yeah. I bet he'll know. That gives us until next year before we can compete. But they said we can work out with the team. And I get to use the university's gym whenever I want." Braden adds, "Me too. And that's exactly where I'm gonna be after work every day. At the gym." Wondering how everything will fall into place, Kathy mentions, "So, now I'm wondering when Eddie and Mark will actually be on the team. They never really said." Paula comments, "If they all start at the same time, then they'll have everyone for 4 years. If Mark and Eddie run this year, they'd only have the group together for 3 years. Kathy replies, "You do have a point, but Johnson is already running. And Dr. Braun was asking me about the runners in high school. Maybe he'll have his eye on someone else, like maybe Hoffa, John, Davida, or maybe even Sokolov." Apparently Kathy and Paula have learned a lot working as a team assistant to Mr. Fraser for several years. Eddie mentions, "Hopefully, we'll get to start next year. I still have a lot of stuff to do around the house." Mark adds, "Yeah, me too. I have to finish building our house." Bobby B. will be helping Mark, so they will both be tied up working for a while. Braden mentions, "I really like the deal I got. I can work for a year and save up some money for a car." Kathy, seeing that everyone is ecstatic, exclaims, "I was hoping this would happen. I'm so glad we're all back together again." After lunch, everyone goes their own way for the afternoon. Kathy is very happy to hear that the group is back together again. Best of all, it looks like the 4x440 relay team that has been running together for 7 years will be back on the track. And it is especially good to hear that the university's coaches like Braden's energetic personality. McCutcheon, however, doesn't, but that's his problem. McCutcheon will have a few years of dealing with the tribe on a daily basis, instead of only a few times a year. The next week, on Saturday, right before the 12-team divisional track meet begins, Dr. Braun asks Kathy, "What will it take for Eddie to build a few of those resistance sleds for us?" Kathy explains, "I'll ask him when I get a break. He's up in the stands watching today, along with Mark, Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B. I'm sure he can build a few for you. He built one for Erica, Tessa, and John, which didn't really take too long. Dr. Braun asks Kathy, see what it will take. I'd like to get a few for the spring when we can train outside. Dr. Braun then asks Kathy, so, they all came to watch the meet? Kathy replies, yeah. And they have their stopwatches in hand. They are checking out the competition. Dr. Braun tells Kathy, with their times, they could easily win something here today. Kathy thinks to herself that Eddie, and the rest of the group, could easily win everything out there today. But she refrains from saying it. Eddie, Mark, Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B all meet up in the stands, waiting for the meet to begin. Erica and Amber are with them, wanting to see what college-level competition is like. They spot Kathy, Paula, and Barbara standing among their teammates. Mark points out, hey, there's McCrutchen, standing with that other guy. Eddie interjects, yeah, the lug nut. Mark replies, yeah, that guy. And Johnson is nowhere near them. Eddie catches Kathy and Paula searching the stands, and he gets everyone to wave. Seeing the guys, Kathy and Paula now know where the tribe is seated. The meet begins with the men's 40-yard dash. Watching as the 40-yard dash is underway, Mark mentions to everyone, everything is going to move along really quickly. Braden asks, are these guys fast? Mark replies, last year, they weren't as fast as we were. Braden can't wait to see the 440-yard dash and the relay races. Eddie times a few of the 40-yard dash heats, realizing that he could have won that event today. So could have Mark or Braden. After the men are finished with their preliminary heats, the women are up in the 40-yard dash. The women's 40-yard dash has come to be known as the girl fight. Kathy and Paula are in the first heat today with the other highly seeded runners. Running with them are a few familiar faces from last year. One of the familiar faces is Liz Duncan, who is now a senior. Seeing Liz and a few other runners from last year, Kathy mentions, wow. I'm so excited. We're all running together again. Liz, who thinks Kathy's gold medal in this event last year should have been hers, replies, you're going down this year, bitch. Kathy giggles, looks at Paula, and tells her, oh, how sweet. It looks like we're running against the Ice Princess. Paula replies, good. The heat coming from my sneakers will melt her fat ass. Paula sounds as if she has been taking lessons from Mark. Paula's comment did not sit well with Liz, who is in the lane next to Paula. The starter announces, on your marks. All the women get into the blocks and, for some reason, some of them are looking at their opponents rather than focusing on the race. The starter announces, set, and the runners get in the set position. Paula whispers, melt, under her breath, causing Liz to look toward Paula. The buzzer sounds, and Kathy and Paula both let out a primal scream as they leave the blocks. A few yards out of the blocks, Kathy and Paula have a distinct advantage over Liz and lead the pack. Kathy crosses the finish line first, with Paula finishing right behind her. The rest of the pack finishes in a bunched-up group. Determining third and fourth place will take some time to be determined by the officials, who will have to resort to photographs. Kathy and Paula know they have made the final. Liz, however, is not so sure whether she has qualified. Finishing in the middle of the pack, Liz looks over at Kathy and Paula, giving them both the evil eye. Kathy tells Paula, it looks like the Ice Princess is turning into boiling water. Paula, glancing at Liz, replies, I can see that. She's really ticked off. I wonder why. Until Kathy and Paula arrived on the scene, Liz was the fastest female athlete in the division. Liz does not like the fact that her title has been usurped. Kathy and Paula walk back to their team bench and await the final. After a few more events, the call is made for the men's 440-yard dash. This is the event that Braden has been waiting for. The first heat, which brings with it the better runners, is lined up and ready to go. Braden is also ready, sitting at the edge of his seat with his finger on his stopwatch. The buzzer sounds and, from a distance, the runners appear to be running slower than they actually are. As the first runner approaches the halfway point, Eddie comments, "That was a 25-second split, which would translate, at best, to be a 50-second quarter mile." Hearing what Eddie just said, Braden is exhilarated, knowing that he would be winning this race if he were on the track. As the first runner crosses the finish line, Braden clicks his stopwatch, exclaiming, 52 seconds. I beat that when I was a junior in high school. I could have kicked his ass. Braden was, in fact, a junior in high school when he first broke 50 seconds in the quarter mile. The third heat brings with it a few familiar faces. Eddie announces, "Hey, our man is in this heat." Johnson, who is a freshman and therefore an unseeded runner, is running in this heat. Eddie then tells Mark, McCrutchen and the lug nut are also on the track. Mark replies, "I'm going to clock McCrutchen." Eddie asks, "Where's your calendar?" Braden tells everyone, "I'll clock Johnson. I'm gonna see what Johnson can do." Eddie then announces, "I'll clock the lug nut. Wake me up when he gets near the finish line." The buzzer sounds, again accompanied by the sound of a half dozen stopwatches starting. Johnson takes the lead, with no one remotely close to him. Leggett appears to be in the middle of the pack, as McCutchen loses ground as the race progresses. Halfway through the race, Braden announces, "Johnson clocked a 23 split. He's kicking ass." Eddie announces, "I clocked lug nut at a 28-second split." A few seconds later, Mark announces, "McCrutchen's not even going to break 60. Crossing the finish line first is Johnson, with a time of 46.3 seconds according to Braden's watch. Johnson, an unseeded runner with the best time so far, has raised a lot of unrest on some of the team benches. Leggett delivers a mediocre performance, with a time of 56.3 seconds. And, as Mark predicted, McCutchen did not break 60 seconds. Standing up, walking up and down the stairs, Braden exclaims, "I can't wait. I'm kicking ass. The chief ass kicker is gonna be back." Braden now knows he can beat everyone out on the track. Eddie tells Braden, "I don't know, bro. You never know. McCrutchen could be holding back." Braden exclaims, "Bring it on." McCrutchen is the new Jimmy O'Brien. Braden, after seeing the 440-yard dash, is fired up and ready to compete. Winning, however, is not enough for Braden. Winning the race and demonstrating that he had no competition is Braden's real goal. Sitting back, enjoying the entertainment, is Mark, thinking of new and improved ways to mess with McCutchen and perhaps a few others. To Mark, McCutchen is a non-competitive athlete and should not even be on the track team. It didn't take Mark long to realize that McCutchen is mentally vulnerable to every trick in the book. So, over the years, Mark has used that to his advantage. McCutcheon's high school coach, Mr. Ruff, was equally, if not more, vulnerable. Mark is contemplating whether he will have to modify his tactics next year. Before lunch, the call is made for the 40-yard dash final, for which Kathy and Paula have both qualified. So has Liz Duncan, albeit with the slowest qualifying time of the day. In her mind, Liz blames Paula for her poor performance in the preliminaries, for Paula distracted her at the starting line. But that would be Liz's problem, not Paula's. Watching from the bleachers, the tribe is sitting at the edge of their seats. Kathy and Paula wave to the tribe, who all wave back. Liz catches sight of Kathy and Paula's fan club in the stands, and remarks, "They are all going to watch you lose." In response to Liz, Paula mentions to Kathy, "I thought there was a rule against running when you're on your cycle." Paula's comment infuriates Liz, who apparently has a short fuse that is easily lit. The starter tells the 40-yard dash finalists, "This is the final for the 40-yard dash. Good luck. On your marks." The starter announces, "Set," as everyone gets into position. The buzzer sounds, and the runners are off. Kathy's primal scream echoes through the arena as she moves into first place. Right behind her is Paula, who is not about to be beaten by Liz. Wanting another gold medal, Kathy pushes herself toward the finish line harder. In a repeat performance of last year, Kathy takes first place, Paula takes second place, and Liz, finishing 1 yard behind Paula, takes third place. With the 40-yard dash over, Kathy and Paula are now free for a while and head up to the stands to find the tribe. Today, Johnson, Barbara, and Janice joined the group for lunch. Kathy and Paula's next race, the mile medley relay, will be in the afternoon. When they meet up, everyone gives Kathy, Paula, and Johnson a high five, congratulating them on their individual victories. Janice, who is now a senior, comments, "It's too bad you guys aren't down there. The guys can definitely use some help." Braden comments, "I can't wait. There needs to be a major league as kicking down there. Somebody's got to do it. My grandmother can run faster than some of those guys." Johnson replies, "We're waiting for you, bro." Janice is amused by Braden's enthusiasm, something that is clearly missing from the college team. Kathy clearly noticed the lack of energy and exuberance among the team members over the last year, which is why she is glad the tribe is getting back together again. During lunch, Kathy tells Eddie, "Dr. Braun said he wants a few of your training sleds. He wanted to know what it would take to get a few." Eddie asks, "How many does he want?" Kathy explains, "He really didn't say, but he said he wanted them for the spring." Quick with the answer, Eddie tells Kathy, "Well, it takes less than a day to build one." "Wait, wait. It takes 4 days to build one. I'm married now." Kathy exclaims, "Hey, now. What's that supposed to mean?" Eddie explains, "We have other things we do now. Oh, and I have a job. So, just ask him how many he wants. I'll start on them this week." Eddie then asks, "Why does he want them for the spring? Why not now?" Kathy replies, "He said, I'd like to get a few for the spring when we can train outside. I guess he's waiting for it to get warmer out." Eddie mentions, "That's the problem with that team. They have to run between 68 and 72 degrees. It has to be 50% relative humidity. The wind can't be more than 2 miles per hour, and you can't get them wet. Then, at the track meet, it's 75 degrees, and they all pass out from heat exhaustion. Or it's 63 degrees outside, and they are all shivering and looking for a heater. No wonder most of them suck. They need to be training outside now." Kathy thinks about what Eddie said and replies, "Yeah, we ride our bicycles in the heat and in the cold, and the weather never stops us." Eddie replies, "Exactly." After lunch, the tribe heads back up to the bleachers, and the team members head back to the bench. Upright after lunch is the men's mile, which Mitchell has been waiting for. Mitchell will have his eye on Daryl Stone, the miler who is on full scholarship and doesn't go to any classes. Mitchell beat Stone a week ago in the mile, but that was a time trial, not an intercollegiate competition. The call is made for the men's 1 mile run. On the track, in the inside position, is Stone, who is expected to win the event. Stone, who can now consistently break a 4-minute mile, is not to be taken lightly. Mitchell, who has the race down to a science, assigns the rest of the tribe to time each one of Stone's quarter-mile splits. Mitchell is not only interested in how fast Stone really is, but how he runs. The buzzer sounds and the 1 mile run begins. Stone sprints the first few yards to secure the leading position. Had he been in this race, Mitchell would visualize himself as being right behind Stone at this time, gaining the benefit of drafting. A few runners are trying to keep pace with Stone and, during the first lap, manage quite well. At the end of the first quarter mile, Mark informs Mitchell, "In the first quarter, I clocked Stone at 58 seconds. Stone, who has demonstrated he is capable of running a 52.5 second quarter mile, would be considered near his limit at his current pace for this distance. During the second quarter mile, the field spreads tremendously. Halfway through the race, Eddie tells Mitchell, his second quarter mile was 61.5 seconds. Braden, starting his stopwatch, exclaims, "That's a 2-minute half mile. At least they got one guy who can run." 1 minute, 59.5 seconds is not a bad 880-yard split time for the mile. On Stone's heels is another runner, wearing number 194, who is pushing Stone to his limit. This is good news to Mitchell, who is gauging Stone's performance. If Stone were not being pushed, he may not run at his best. The third quarter mile brings an interesting development. Number 194 passes Stone, who drafts off the new leader for a while. At the end of the third quarter mile, Braden announces he's slowing down. That was a 62-second quarter. He's running out of gas. Mitchell, however, sees the race a bit differently. If Mitchell's thinking is correct, Stone will make a move during the last part of the race. About 100 yards into the last quarter mile, Stone easily passes number 194. For the final lap, the gap between Stone and number 194 widens slightly. Observing carefully, with 100 yards remaining in the race, Mitchell notices the gap between the two front runners is now static. Another runner, number 392, is gaining on number 194. Mitchell is confident the three front runners are all at their limit. Stone crosses the finish line, and Errico announces, "The last quarter of a mile was 58.2 seconds. On Mitchell's watch, Stone ran a 4-minute and 0.2 second mile. Using the approximate split times, Mitchell calculates Stone ran a 3-minute, 59.7 second mile. Number 194, in second place, was about 3 seconds slower. Number 392, taking third place, crossed the finish line on the heels of number 194. Mitchell assesses that Stone, running at his limit, is just barely capable of breaking a 4-minute mile. And Mitchell would be correct. Stone's official time is posted as 4 minutes and 1/10 of a second. Now confident that he will be not only competitive at this level of competition, Mitchell also realizes he stands a good chance of winning this event. Mitchell also now fully understands why the university gave him such a great deal. Stone is the best the university and the division has, and Mitchell is better. The call is made for the Women's Mile Medley Relay. Kathy, Paula, Barbara, and Janice all return this year in this event. Kathy and Paula will each be running the 220-yard legs, Janice will be running the 440-yard leg, and Barbara will be running the 880-yard leg. Last year, the Women's Mile Medley team took first place in every meet they attended. This year is not expected to be any different. Once again on the track with Paula is Liz Duncan, who still has not gotten over losing the 40-yard dash earlier today. Liz gives Paula a dirty look, whispering, "Bitch," just loud enough for Paula to hear. Paula responds by saying, "Meow," pretty much calling the Ice Princess a pussy. Paula beat Liz badly in the first leg of the Mile Medley Relay last year, which Liz certainly remembers. The starter announces, "On your marks." Paula is ready, but Liz is angry and has a score to settle. The starter announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and Paula takes off, again showing Liz who's the boss. During the first 50 yards, in contrast to last year, Paula is in the lead. Giving it her best, all that Liz can deliver is not enough to threaten Paula's position. Paula hands off to Kathy, who leaves the transition zone letting out a primal scream that echoes throughout the arena. Kathy takes off, widening the 15-yard lead she inherited from Paula. Walking to the inside of the track, Paula is watching and cooling down as Kathy maintains control of the race. Paula grins as she watches Kathy hand off to Janice. Paula verbally counts the seconds between Kathy handing off to Janice and Liz's team's handoff. For some reason, Paula, counting the seconds, irritates Liz, who blurts out a few obscenities and flips Paula a bird, albeit quite discreetly. Janice, who now averages a 55-second quarter mile, is not likely to be caught. Since Janice was handed a 10-second lead, Braden, Eddie, or Mark would have to be on the track if she is expected to be caught. Paula, knowing they have the race wrapped up, walks over to Kathy, giving her a high five. Still in first place, Janice hands off to Barbara. Barbara, now with a 14-second lead, allows the other runners to battle it out to determine the first loser. No one has ever passed Barbara on the track in this event before. With a 14-second lead, the team in second place will have to break the women's world record in the 880-yard run by about 8 seconds in order to win. That is simply not going to happen. On her last lap, Barbara sprints toward the finish line, taking first place in their heat. The relay team members exchange hugs and head to the team bench. The final event of the day is the 4x440 relay, which spurs a lot of interest for Eddie, Mark, and Braden. This has been their race for 7 years. Their competition, however, has been at the middle school and high school level. This is college. With a recent composite time of 3 minutes, 3.6 seconds, and an average of 45.9 seconds per leg, where they would stand in college competition is about to be seen. With 12 teams and 2 heats, the winner will quickly be decided. The first heat brings the university team, comprising of Johnson, Stone, Leggett, and, for some reason, McCutcheon. Mark, evaluating the field, comments, "This is going to be interesting." Eddie, taking a closer look, replies, "Wow. McCutcheon and Lugnut. I feel sorry for Johnson." The group decides who will time whom as they await the beginning of the race. The buzzer sounds, and Stone is out of the blocks. The tribe all moves to the edge of their seat in anticipation. Mark, referring to Stone, comments, "He looks strong." After the first lap, Stone is clearly in the lead. Eddie mentions, "Lugnut is getting on the track," as Leggett enters the transition zone. As Stone, who is currently in the lead, approaches the transition zone, Leggett takes off. Stone hands off to Leggett, who was not remotely close to full speed during the transition. Mitchell announces to everyone, "Stone ran a 53.2 second leg." Eddie comments, "I thought they said Lugnut was their best 440 guy. It looks like Stone is faster." The clock doesn't lie. Stone is clearly faster than Leggett in a 440-yard competition. Leggett gets off to a slow start, being passed by another runner 100 yards into the leg. Eddie comments, "Well, there goes the lead." Mark replies, "And here goes the race, right down the toilet. McCutcheon just got on the track." As Leggett approaches the transition zone, McCutcheon takes off. McCutcheon, who left too early, has to slow down to receive the baton. Not getting a good grip, McCutcheon fumbles the baton, quickly retrieving it. Fortunately, for the team, the baton did not leave McCutcheon's lane. Mark comments, "Well, that didn't go exactly as planned." Eddie announces, "I clocked Lugnut at about 62 seconds. Mark asks, "What do you mean, about 62 seconds? Eddie replies, "It took them 3 or 4 seconds to hand it off, and then it spent a lot of time on the ground. I don't know who's responsible for the time the baton was on the ground." Mark laughs and replies, "That's kind of funny. That handoff kind of sucked." Braden comments, "I wouldn't even call that a handoff." After the bungled handoff, McCutcheon is now in fifth place. McCutcheon makes his way around the track and, at the halfway mark, is passed by the last place runner. McCutcheon, now in last place, has carved out a lot of work for Johnson to do. As McCutcheon approaches the transition zone, Johnson grabs the baton and takes off. Mark announces, with the bungled handoff, McCrutchen ran a 68-second quarter mile. Eddie comments, wow. That's not even a good middle school time. Johnson, with a lot of work to do, is up against the rest of the anchormen. The anchorman is typically the fastest member of the relay team. Halfway through his leg, Johnson manages to move up to fifth place. During the last lap, Johnson has his eyes on fourth place. As he approaches the finish line, Johnson edges out the other runner, taking fourth place in this heat. Braden announces, I clocked Johnson at 47.7. He kicked ass. Mark comments, yeah, McCrutchen's ass. McCrutchen is why they lost. Disgusted with his team's performance, Johnson tosses the baton to McCrutchen. McCrutchen tries to catch it, but it again falls to the floor, prompting a little laughter from the crowd. The winning time of the meet in the 4x440 relay was 3 minutes, 22.4 seconds, a far cry from the tribe's performance last week. Johnson, and the rest of the university team, turned in a time of 3 minutes and 53 seconds according to Erika's stopwatch. Allowing 10 seconds for the bungled handoff, which is generous, the time would have been 3 minutes and 43 seconds, which is still not a good time. Even Erika knows the relay team's performance is far below par. Fortunately, for Johnson, taking first place in the 440-yard dash, he will not walk away from this meet empty-handed. The end of the meet brings the awards ceremony. With 12 teams competing, winning a medal is far more difficult than it was in high school. The meet announcer introduces today's officials and recognizes the coaches and athletes for their participation today. The ceremony then moves on to the delivery of the awards. In the women's events, Kathy is called to the stage to receive the gold medal in the women's 40-yard dash. Next to her is Paula, who takes the silver medal in that event. Liz Duncan must again settle for the bronze medal and is not happy at all. Paula takes the gold medal in the 220-yard dash, with Kathy taking the silver medal. Janice, who is happy as she can be, won the gold medal in the 440-yard dash this year. As expected, Barbara wins the gold medal in the mile and in the half mile. And finally, Kathy, Paula, Janice, and Barbara are called to the stage to receive the gold medal in the women's mile medley relay. In the men's events, Johnson takes home the gold medal in the men's 440-yard dash and in the half mile. In the men's mile, Daryl Stone wins the gold medal. In the field events, Pete Mendenhall takes home the bronze medal in the shot put. In internal competition within the university, it appears that the women walked away with the win today, taking home many more medals than the men. When the awards ceremony is over, Braden exclaims, well, I'm glad I came. Bobby B. replies, me too. Braden continues, if I was down there on that track, I could have won 3 gold medals. Mark asks, oh yeah. Which ones? Braden replies, the 40-yard dash, the 220, and the 440. Eddie replies, not if I was down there, bro. Mark adds, or me. But Braden does have a point. He would have taken those 3 events if he were on the track today. But so could have Eddie or Mark. After the meet, the group is much more confident that, when they finally get on the track, they will win. After the ceremony, the tribe meets up with the team and decides to head to the pizzeria for dinner. Kathy, Paula, and Johnson all had a good day, but didn't get much to eat since they had to run. Since this is Johnson's first college meet, he is glad to walk away with 2 gold medals. Eddie and his group head out, with everyone glad to see that they will all be competent at college-level performance. A few days after the track meet, Kathy tells Eddie, "My leg muscles are really sore. I think it's from the meet." Eddie tells Kathy, "You could take a warm Epsom salt bath. That might help." Kathy replies, "Yeah, I might just do that. Maybe I'll find a massage therapist too." After I had that massage on the ship, I couldn't believe how easily I could move. Kathy heads to the bathtub, wasting no time getting her warm bath. When Kathy gets out of the bathtub, Eddie tells her, "I got you an appointment with a massage therapist." Kathy exclaims, "Really? When?" Eddie replies, "In an hour from now." Kathy exclaims, "Awesome." Eddie tells Kathy, "It's not too far away." The place is in the same office complex as Davies and Rice, the attorney we used for our house. The massage therapist's name is Valeria. She said she works a lot with athletes. Kathy replies, "That sounds like just what I need." Kathy heads to the massage therapist's office, leaving a little early because she is so excited. Eddie heads out himself to the hardware store to pick up some steel components and other parts to make a few training sleds for the university. When Kathy arrives, Valeria greets her and has her fill out a little bit of paperwork, mostly to find out what today's problem is. Kathy tells Valeria that she's on the university track team and runs sprints. Valeria asks Kathy, "Do you, by any chance, know Dr. Braun?" Kathy tells her, "Yeah. He's our head coach." Valeria tells Kathy, "He's sent a lot of athletes to me over the years." Kathy now knows she is in good hands. Kathy gets on the massage table, and Valeria knows immediately why Kathy is looking for a massage. Many of Kathy's muscles are clearly overworked. Valeria works out Kathy's muscle knots and does a lot of stretching of Kathy's muscles. After an hour and a half of massage therapy, Kathy doesn't want to get off the table. But all good things must come to an end. Before she leaves, Kathy makes another appointment for herself and one for Eddie, both for next week. In his spare time, Eddie built 4 resistance sleds for Dr. Braun. Eddie was careful to make them all identical. He even had Vinny, at the body shop, powder coat them, giving them a clean professional look. The powder coat finish is scratch and chip resistant, improving durability. Eddie even bought 8 25-pound weight plates, 2 for each unit, powder coated them, and threw them in as a bonus. With the 4 perfectly crafted units ready for delivery, Eddie loads 2 units into his MGB and 2 units into Kathy's Porsche as they head out to practice. Arriving at practice earlier than usual on Monday morning, Eddie and Kathy move the 4 resistance sleds into the gym and place them on the bleachers. Eddie asks Kathy, "Do you think the welds look okay?" Kathy replies, "They look fine to me." Eddie comments, "It seems like these 4 units are my final exam in a class or something." Kathy replies, "Then, you will definitely get an A." Eddie hangs around for a few minutes, talking with Kathy as the team members slowly trickle into the arena. Since Eddie is not practicing with the team today, he starts to head out, telling Kathy, "Well, I guess I'll see you later this afternoon." Kathy asks, "Aren't you going to wait until Dr. Braun gets here?" Eddie replies, "I wasn't. But I can wait if you want me to." Kathy tells Eddie, "Yeah. Hang around. You don't have to be at work until 9 o'clock anyway." Eddie stays around a little longer, talking with the other tribe members as they wait for practice to begin. Dr. Braun walks into the arena along with the other coaches. The head coach announces, "May I have your attention, please? For the next few weeks, we all have a lot of work ahead of us. During the last 2 meets, we have turned in some dismal performances. Some of you, however, have turned in some exemplary performances. You know who you are. We have another big meet coming up in 2 weeks. So, are we ready?" A few of the athletes reply, "Yeah," but the general feeling is one of apathy. Dr. Braun continues, telling the athletes to meet with their respective coaches. Perceiving the lack of energy of the team, Eddie tells Kathy, "Well, I guess I'm going to go. Tell Dr. Braun that the 4 units are free." Eddie kisses Kathy goodbye and heads to the door. Kathy walks toward Dr. Braun to tell him that Eddie finished the resistance sleds. Dr. Braun, seeing Eddie walking toward the door, yells out, "Hey, Eddie, do you have a moment?" Eddie turns around and replies, "Yeah. What's up?" Dr. Braun tells Eddie, "I just wanted to say hi. If you, Mark, Braden, and Bradshaw want to join us for practice anytime, feel free to come by." Eddie responds, "Yeah, we'd really like to do that sometime," meaning that Eddie and the tribe would like the chance to kick someone's ass every once in a while, especially McCutcheon's. With unmistakable enthusiasm, Kathy tells Dr. Braun, "Eddie finished his training sleds." Pointing to the end of the bleachers, Kathy tells him, "They are over there." Dr. Braun's eyes open wide as he says, "Wow. Let me take a look." Dr. Braun walks over and examines the units, exclaiming, "Wow. These look really great. They look very professionally made." Kathy interjects, "Yeah. By Eddie, the mechanic." Dr. Braun, also with a lot of enthusiasm, yells out to Coach Herndon, "Hey, come and take a look at this," getting the attention of the sprinters as well. Coach Herndon walks over, joined by a few of the sprinters, and takes a look at Eddie's masterpieces. Coach Herndon comments, "Wow. These look really great. I can't wait to put them to use." Looking at Eddie, Kathy smiles, assuring him that his work is greatly appreciated. And Eddie is happy that his welds are not rejected. As a few of the sprinters look at the units, McCutcheon comments to his older brother, "Not those pieces of shit," heard by all standing around. Eddie turns around and boldly asks McCutcheon, "What did you just say?" McCutcheon, trying to gain the upper hand, replies, "I said, not those pieces of shit. I really don't think they are worth anything." Silence falls over the arena in response to McCutcheon's derogatory comments. Angered by McCutcheon's comment, Eddie replies, "The only thing around here that's shit, McCutcheon, is your performance on the track. You can't hand off a baton. You can't break 60 seconds in the 440. And I ran the 100-yard dash faster when I was in 8th grade than you can now. And when you run, you never win. Then, when you come in last place, you sob like a little pansy in a hurricane." Pointing to the resistance sled, Eddie exclaims, "That piece of equipment is how I can run 100 yards in 9.2 seconds. And until you can do that, just shut up. And don't you dare call my work of art a piece of shit again." Dead silence remains over the arena. Apparently, Eddie has the floor, so he continues. Recalling what he told Kathy during the track meet a few weeks ago, Eddie exclaims, "And that's the problem with you, McCutcheon. You can only run when it's between 68 and 72 degrees, and it has to be 50% humidity. The wind can't be more than 2 miles per hour, and you won't run in the rain because you'll get wet. And when it's snowing, you cuddle up in your little blankie. Then, at the track meet, when it's 80 degrees, you pass out from heat exhaustion. And if it's 60 degrees outside, you stand there shivering, looking for a heater. No wonder you suck, and you never win." Janice whispers to Paula, "Did he just call him McCutcheon?" Paula whispers back, "Yeah. You heard that right." With some advice, Eddie continues, "You should be out there dragging that sled up and down the sand track, in the heat, in the cold, in the rain, and in the snow. When it's hot outside, you should be wearing sweatpants. And when it's cold out, you should be running in shorts. In the snow, you should be running in your bare feet. You need to toughen up your little pussy ass. Then, when you can barely stand up anymore, that's when you should start running your laps." Eddie just whittled McCutcheon down to the level of a spoiled little brat. As if that wasn't enough, Leggett starts laughing at Eddie and comments to someone, "He's not even in college. He doesn't know anything." Looking sternly at Leggett, Eddie, calling him out, tells him and everyone around, "And you're laughing at me. When we're watching you in a meet and see you running high school times, we're all laughing at you. I've timed you. I ran better times than you when I was in 10th grade. And if you take those lead weights off your feet and lose your heavy socks, maybe you'll run times worthy of the scholarship they gave you. Oh, and by the way, that was a wonderful handoff during the divisional meet. Dr. Braun starts clapping, followed by a few of the sprinters. After a few seconds, the other coaches and the entire team are clapping their hands, except for McCutcheon and Leggett. Eddie, reiterating Dr. Braun's introductory speech given earlier today, said it in an unmistakably clear way. And Johnson, sitting back on the bleachers, enjoyed the whole show. Daryl Stone, the team's star miler, taking advantage of the brief intermission, asks, "Hey, can I take one of those out to the sand track and use it today?" Dr. Braun replies, "We're all going out to the track right now and using them today. So, let's go." On the way out, one athlete asks, "How are we getting them out there?" Picking up two of the units, one in each hand, Eddie replies, "Like this. And if you're carrying the weight plates, do curls with them on the way." Eddie carries two of the four sleds out to the track, using his hands. Manual labor appears to be somewhat foreign to some of the athletes. The other two sleds and the eight weight plates are carried out by a few of the other team members. Out on the sand track, half of the runners are positioned on one end of the 220-yard track, and the other half are positioned at the other end. Dr. Braun tells the athletes to load each sled with 25 pounds. With Dr. Paxton and Mrs. Owens at one end, and Dr. Braun and Coach Herndon at the other end, everyone is now ready to train. Stone, who can't wait to try the sled, volunteers to be in the first group. Alongside him is Johnson, Kathy, and, by Dr. Braun's choosing, McCutcheon. The group takes off, struggling to run 220 yards down the sand track, dragging behind them a sled that is designed to provide unmerciful resistance. Once at the other end of the track, three of the four athletes take off the harness, and another group of three are strapped in. McCutcheon should arrive in a few minutes. The second group runs their 220 yards, dodging McCutcheon on the way down the track, then getting in line at the other end for their next heat. The team will be doing this for the next hour, or until they drop dead, whichever comes first. As the exercise continues, some of the runners are not able to complete the 220 yards. Dr. Braun instructs the 25-pound weight plate to be removed from two of the sleds, and for the runners to continue without weight. Unweighted, the sled still provides significant resistance. Dr. Braun takes Eddie aside and tells him, "I want to thank you for what you said in there. I believe what you said got through to all of them." Eddie explains, "I really don't get it. McCutcheon ran faster a few years ago than he does now. His high school, Centerville, even sent spies to our high school to watch our workouts. Their spies never did find out our secret workout." Dr. Braun asks, "What workout is that?" Eddie explains, "The workout is a variation of fartlek training, which has its origins in Sweden. It's a structured mixture of distance work and sprinting. It's kind of like interval training." Dr. Braun comments, "I've not heard of fartlek training," which surprises Eddie. Eddie would have thought that the head track coach of the university would have heard of fartlek training, at least in theory. Eddie, describing the distance runner's workout, explains to Dr. Braun, "During the drill, the distance runners run on the outside of the track for about an hour. After every mile, they drop to the inside of the track and sprint 440 yards as fast as they can as if it was the final lap of the race. They will then drop to the outside of the track again and run another mile." Explaining the sprinter's workout, Eddie continues, "The sprinters sprint on the inside of the track for 440 yards, then drop to the outside, taking a recovery lap with the distance group. After their recovery lap, the sprinters sprint for another 440 yards. Once they can't sprint for 440 yards any longer, the sprinting distance is dropped to 220 yards with a 440-yard recovery lap. And when 220 yards is too hard, the sprinting distance is dropped to 110 yards. Eddie adds, oh, and we get a 5-minute water break every so often. Amazed at what he is hearing, Dr. Braun comments, that must be some workout. Eddie replies, it is. No one likes it. Mr. Fraser always says that there are only two races that are run in track. The first is the 100-yard dash, and the second is the 440-yard dash. He says that any distance race is nothing more than a 440-yard dash with a long warm-up run before the final sprint. The 220-yard dash is really a prolonged 100-yard dash, and the 40-yard dash is really just a short 100-yard dash. Dr. Braun tells Eddie, I might try that workout on the group tomorrow. Looking at the runners on the sand track as they struggle, Eddie replies, most of them won't be able to walk tomorrow. The workout is highly anaerobic. From what I can see, some of them might need a day off. Dr. Braun, seeing some of the runners barely able to move, replies, I think you might be correct in your assessment. As Eddie and Dr. Braun are talking, Coach Herndon exclaims, get moving. Some of you are really slacking off. Coach Herndon can see that the team is getting a good workout and wants to maximize their efforts and therefore results on the track. Many of the team members seem to dislike the workout, which is a good sign that they are making progress. And, from Coach Herndon's vantage point, the workout clearly separates the skilled athletes from the not-so-skilled athletes. Stone, who perceives he is getting a great benefit from the workout, asks Eddie, hey, what do I have to do to get one of these? Eddie replies, I'd have to build one for you. I can do that if you want. Stone, with a consistent mile time just barely under 4 minutes, has hit a performance barrier. Getting ready to run another 220 yards, Stone tells Eddie, let's talk about it sometime. It appears that Eddie will be building a few more units in the near future. After practice, the resistance sleds and weights are carried back to the arena by the team members who still have some semblance of life left in them. Dr. Braun mentions to Coach Herndon, well, just take a look at that. The ones carrying the equipment back to the arena are the ones who consistently win. Coach Herndon replies, I see that. I should make the ones who didn't carry any equipment back run a few laps when we get back inside. But we're out of time. Dr. Braun grins and suggests, we'll do that next time.